No,
But
it's
anyway,
not.
so in review, so I wanted to mention this wonderful thing that happened with us is we found a way to deal with microbes. We have come up with a tool that, I have it right here. It comes in a bottle like this. We can show it. It's called Amazing Soak. It's sort of like a antimicrobial agent, and you can
Okay.
use it as a sanitizer. And that
Oh, so if I
sanitizer.
wanted to like clean my kitchen's
Yeah. Yeah.
counter, I can put
Yeah.
on
And so
there.
we sell it either as a concentrate in a bottle like this, or we can dilute it 50-to-1, and we put it in a bottle like this. And when it's diluted like that, you can see that this has got a spray top. So, and I personally use it in a bottle like this. It also has a spray top. And so when I use it, I just go open wide and I spray it in my mouth and I
So,
inhale it. However, this is
you
often
dilute it in that
used.
bottle, or
What's that?
did you dilute it in that bottle? Is
Yeah,
that
the stuff in the bottle is diluted 50-to-1. Yeah, we definitely don't want to inhale the concentrate. I
right?
did put some of the concentrate straight in my ear, and because I thought, well, let's see if I can deal with this ear problem. And it was not smart.
Oh, was that painful?
It was unpleasant.
I shiver just thinking about that.
The reason I'm putting this up here is this. I'm really disappointed in how our world is not allowing intelligent technologies to be discussed on the public channels. Like
Right.
when Trump started talking about, well, maybe there's some kind of a bleach that we could use to maybe like get these things under control. I don't know if he knew it or didn't know it, but this is what he was talking about. It exists. And of course, he was made fun of mercilessly.
Right.
And so we're not talking about this stuff, probably because it doesn't suit the agenda of the people who are in control of the pharmaceutical industry. But there are others. For example, Dr. Brownstein has been broadcasting about using hydrogen peroxide and iodine in an
Right.
nebulizer.
Oh, okay.
Works phenomenal. It works. Another guy was talking about using colloidal silver. That also works. Like you can spray colloidal silver on things.
I read some people are using a lot of vitamin D3, making sure they've got their vitamin D up and get a lot of sun and
Yeah, right. That's the other thing. Yeah, vitamin D works. That needs to be. You need to have your vitamin D level above 50, preferably above 60. Most Americans are below 40, and Black Americans are below 20. One of the main reasons that dark-skinned people are doing badly with these infections is the vitamin D issue.
right. You need to have all your levels at optimum levels as
Yeah.
opposed to in survival mode.
Yeah, well, above survival, thrival.
Right. Well, yeah, I mean if you're at a survival mode, then anything can push you off the deep end and you're gonna
Oh yeah,
have more
if you're
problems.
barely hanging on, like for example, one of the major outbreaks in Sweden, one was in old folks' homes, and the other one was in the Somali refugees.
Oh, okay. From
What happens
Africa.
when you take Africans up to, I don't know what, 57 or 80, 60 degrees north?
Yeah, they don't get any sun.
No.
Even when it's sunny, they don't get any sun.
No. They're just not equipped. Anyway, so there was the two major outbreaks, right? And
Right.
again, this is discussed in the alternative channels, but not on the mainstream, right?
It's even discussed in the medical journals, but it's ignored there too.
No, it's in the journals. It's studied.
That's what I mean. It's studied, but it's ignored,
Yeah.
right?
Yeah. Well, the mainstream media is
ignoring
it out. And the doctors in the hospitals are not using it. Why?
Well, they don't read the journals, probably.
Yeah. Another thing is zinc and hydroxychloroquine. Yet another thing that the poor Trump.
Yeah, he got blasted on that one a lot.
Well, he did. And yet, okay, and yet, if you increase zinc, you are strengthening the immune response. Like the immune system is healthier. In fact, people who are experiencing slow healing of wounds or slow recovery from almost anything are usually low in zinc.
Mm.
And the hydroxychloroquine, its performance depends on there being adequate zinc. So whoever was testing it, you know, like if, again, here goes again, the blindness of the system, they will test the hydroxychloroquine and saying, well, it doesn't work. Well, it's supposed to work when you supplement the zinc with it. Like it's like a vehicle for the zinc, right?
Yeah, if you don't have the zinc, then it's not going to work.
Yeah, it's like saying this car won't drive. Well, you only have three wheels on.
Right. Yeah. Or you don't have any gas in the tank.
Or no gas. Yeah. Something like that.
Huh.
Yeah. So that's that has been the biggest thing in our business as such, is that we continue to have this intellectual struggle with the mainstream that actively just ignores the alternative message. And yet the alternative works. It works. It works. It's safe. But I'm not allowed to tell you that it's okay for you to use your kitchen counter sanitizer and inhale it.
Right.
So I'm not telling you that. Please note, legal disclaimer. Just because it worked for me doesn't mean it's going to work for you.
Right.
I have not given you a medical advice. I just told you what worked for me.
So did you ever get the COVID, Martin?
I had something weird that made me quite unwell. I don't know. I caught it on 29th of February, 28th of February.
Okay.
And by March 6th, I had fever and whatever, and then I was over it.
I was quite ill in the beginning of January, but it was basically a bad cold. When they say you've got dry cough or whatever.
You might just have had an ordinary winter.
That's what I think cold. I had a very sore throat, lots of phlegm, usually, like I would think after 64 years, I kind of understand, the process of a cold, a normal cold. And it just went, it goes to one place and then it goes to another place and then it goes to another place, and goes to another place and another place until it's done. Right.
Yep.
And I could feel that. It was like, I can breathe through my nose today, cough, cough. And then tomorrow, my nose plugged up.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. And it just did the rounds and then it was gone. It was like a few weeks, but, and what I really enjoyed doing was going and having a sauna, because I was back here, and I would go to the pool and go in the sauna.
Yeah. And heat shock therapy is really good for the immune system. The best use of the sauna is if you also have a cold pool with it.
Yeah,
you really want to heat yourself up, overheat yourself, and then cool yourself.
Right.
Like, get out of the sauna, roll in the snow or jump in the lake and then come out.
I spent 6 weeks with Norwegians and they were doing that sort of stuff. And it just drove me absolutely crazy. It's like, oh, I can't even look. You're jumping in this ice cold water. And I'm like, oh.
You know, when you're really overheated, it actually feels like a pleasant experience.
I guess. But.
Yeah,
I was not overheated enough.
Oh yeah.
Although I need to tell you a little story about overheating now, just to go on a segue in no man's land. For a year and a half, I did sweats the Native Sweats in North Vancouver. Every Monday afternoon we would go. And it was kind of interesting because this guy I knew was going and his girlfriend was going. She was not Native and she knew me. And she said, would you come with, you know, and support me and go? And she knew I would probably like to do this anyway. And that's how I ended up going. And we really affected the people that were there because they, you know, it was all like Native Americans and they all had bad opinions of white folk. And then here was these two and they were, we were never the ones, you know, all my brothers, let me out of here. It's too hot. And we just put up with it and put up with it and put up with it. And she told me later, you know, we really affected their attitudes towards, you know, white folk, which was kind of nice. But unfortunately, her boyfriend's son around 22 committed suicide. So yeah, he was in Calgary. And so they decided that they would have a, well, I don't know who, they were going to have a sweat, not in, I don't know about in honor of, but to heal. It was a healing sweat. And it was this big thing that they, you know, this tragedy. So that she called me and said, we were doing this thing. We'd really like you to come. And I said, okay, I'll come. So I've been doing a sweat for over a year every week now. And I go to this thing and I realized that all the sweats I was going to, as hard as they might have been, was kindergarten. This sweat was serious. It's like, you know, it's kind of like we go paddle in the lake, everything's good. That's what the sweats were. I didn't know, right? And then when we had this particular sweat, it was like, no, we're like really getting serious. Okay. I got home, it was like, it would have been like an hour after it was done. I'd pulled my shirt off and I had lines burnt into my skin from the sweat dripping down.
Oh boy.
Like, yeah, I mean, it was.
Like you were cooking yourself with your water.
Yeah. Like it was, it wasn't like second degree burns or anything like that, but I could see all of these lines, red lines where water had obviously just dripped down. Right.
Okay.
And it was so intense.
All right. Yeah, but apparently you were strong enough to do it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and the thing is that I wasn't there thinking of me. I wasn't thinking of my pain. I was thinking of healing my friend's pain.
Okay.
And but I mean, that was like no BS. That's
quick. Very good.
That was like hot. And so anyway, you just reminded me of that experience. Mm-hmm. And you know, I think so often we do stuff and we're just kind of like, da-di-da-di-da, and then how often do we actually like really have to get serious and focus? And it was only a couple hours, but it makes a huge difference.
Okay, so let's just switch it up a bit. We talked about all the horrible things. Let me ask you, like, so travel in the age of Corona, how is it?
There isn't any.
Well, how did you manage to travel even though nobody else is? I guess you're willing to quarantine. That's one thing, right?
I got to Medellin, Colombia 3 days before they closed the border. And I was going to be leaving to go to Ecuador. And I had a place in Ecuador that I would have stayed for a couple months.
Didn't happen?
It didn't happen. What's that?
It did not happen.
It did not happen because I couldn't leave. And I would have probably been there a lot longer because she was going to Boston. She was taking her husband who was ill back to the States. And I don't know that she could have got back. But what happened with me was the hotel I was in closed down. And they said, well, we've got another hotel. We'll put you up there. And we did that. And I could see that like this was getting serious. Like, I mean, I don't know the language that well. I'm not 100% sure what's going on. It's just like, things seemed to be closing down. I was a bit worried about how I was going to get food, but as long as you're in a hotel, like they usually feed you. So in this hotel, I looked at Airbnb and I found a place because here I'm in this hotel and all I have is one little window. And I'm thinking, you know, I don't know how long this is going to last, but I don't really want to be in a hotel room for any length of time if I don't have to be. So this Airbnb was on the 9th floor of an 8th floor building. In other words, they had built on top of the building a little studio, and there was a big terrace. So, and it was a 10-minute walk from where I was, and but nobody was supposed to be out. So I was like, actually, when I left, I was kind of a little scared because I got my suitcase and I'm going down the road trying to find this Airbnb. And I got in, and then I said to the owner, I said, you know, this about 2 months in, because it then became obvious I was going to be there a long time. I said, you know, what would be really nice here is a hammock. He goes, oh, that'd be great. Well, I have no clue how to get a hammock, and I have certainly no clue how to get a hammock during a quarantine lockdown. But I said to him, if you find it, I'll pay for it. And so he was like, oh, okay. And about 2 weeks later, I had a hammock, which was great because then I could just lay out. Medellin weather is perfect all the time, and clouds come up onto the mountains, and there's always lightning. Like 5 nights out of 7, there's these lightning blasts going on. And so there's this great show. And I was in a really good environment. The only problem I had was there was a place I could go get food, a little grocery store, but really, what was I going to do for eating? And that's when I discovered takeout. All of these places that were closing, because, you know, they start posting on the Facebook group, hey, if you want this, you know, these are the meals I make. If you want, we deliver, because delivery was going on.
And so every couple easily translated, because you can translate using the digital tools, right?
Well, plus it was a Facebook group for expats, so they knew to post in English for us.
Oh, so that there was actually a whole bunch of people in Medellin that are expats, yeah, that are helping one another.
Yeah, yeah. You know, and they would be looking at the news, and they'd be posting the news, and they'd be translating the news and summarizing the news and that sort of stuff.
Yeah, okay.
And then we weren't allowed to leave. Like, we could leave one day a week, I think. I think at one point we couldn't leave at all. And then it was, you can go out for an hour at 2 o'clock in the afternoon
Cities are just empty and deserted?
They look deserted. They're full of people who can't get out, right? And I have to say, I loved it, because there were no planes roaring across the sky. There was no traffic. There was no fire alarms. There was, you know, no yelling and screaming. There was no loud music. It was great. The air improved. You know, the quality of the air was not good, and then it was great. And,
yeah. Do you think that they are going broke doing this?
There's no doubt that a lot of businesses went under because they couldn't afford to pay their rent. And a lot of restaurants had a really tough time. And I think a lot of people had a really tough time. Like, Medellin has no social net for people who run into problems. They talked about, you know, like in Canada, here's $2,000, be quiet or whatever, you know, buy some food.
In Colombia, there was nothing.
They talked about it, but then there was never any money, right? Like, we've got the X amount of money, and the X amount of money went into the mayor's pocket.
Somebody stole it. Yeah.
Yeah. Somebody stole it. So, so when the borders opened, well, they started allowing traffic, you know, people out of the city, people into different parts of the country. And so I went to Santa Marta, which is on the Caribbean coast, for 2 weeks. I really wanted to sit by a beach, to be honest.
Yeah.
And that was wonderful. And then it was like, you could have left if you wanted to take a humanitarian flight, which is like $2,000 or something. And I thought, if I have to be stuck somewhere, I'm where I would be happy being stuck. So, you know, I think one lesson for people is, if you've gone through this last 9 months and you're really unhappy about it, and you're unhappy about your life, and you're unhappy about where you live, you should start thinking about how you can change those things, because I wasn't living in my home, and I was, you know, I feel like ashamed to say I was happy, right?
Yeah, yeah.
I you don't get exercise. No, I'm on the 9th floor. So what I would do when they delivered me my lunch is I would take the elevator down 9 floors, and then I would walk with my lunch up 9 floors, and I would do that once or twice or 3 times a day. And that was, you know, I was huffing and puffing, and it wasn't,
well,
you know,
10, 9 floors, that's a reasonable lift. Yeah.
And it was amazing to me, after 2 months, how much stronger my legs are, because I could tell I was going up faster, right?
Yes.
I was taking two steps instead of one step and all the rest of it. So it's fun when you do those things and you see an improvement.
Yeah,
and that's great. You know, my business is such that I don't have an office. I can do it anywhere I have my computer.
Yeah, this is an interesting thing I wanted to ask you is, of course, like you're out there and you're not suffering because you're portable, right? Like you managed, you were virtual before it became a necessity, right?
Right. And so, I thrived.
So what did you thrive with?
Well, my business thrived is what I meant.
But, I remember you were a podcaster back when.
Right.
Right. Like your main job, as I remember it, at the time when we decided that we were not going to do this every day or every week, was that you would coach people to create courses and put them online and manage that. Right. Did you stay with that?
Yeah, I have over 140 courses on Udemy now, and they don't make a lot of money. They make a lot of money if you live in Colombia or Africa, but they don't really make a lot of money. However, the credibility and the positioning caused my business to grow like crazy. So people wanted.
So it's a social proof tool for you, right?
Yeah, yeah. And people watch what you do, right? Like people have been watching me for years and years and years. I never knew until, you know, they started asking, you know, so they started approaching me, asking me questions and saying, yeah, I've been watching what you've been doing for the last, you know, really? And one friend of mine been watching for a while and her client needed some help. And then she said, well, Scott can help you. Introduced me. He loved what I did. He introduced me to some of his friends. He's part of a high-end mastermind. I made the presentation for him to present about what we were doing. He says, I don't know what you're doing, Scott, but can you do a presentation about it for me? And he gave that presentation and three or four people came. And instead of having one client, I have, you know, six or seven. And I don't need a lot of clients. And
so these clients pay you a monthly fee or something?
Yeah,
or?
Yeah, every month they pay me a monthly. I send them an invoice. They pay the invoice. And I pay my my remote staff, and we get all the work done for them.
Yeah, we'll talk about remote staff. That's interesting.
Yeah, well, what happened with that is I was working too hard, and he had a virtual assistant who was supposed to be paid for 40 hours. He paid for 40 hours, but she wasn't working 40 hours, and she was honest. So she said, you know, I need more work. And he says, well, I don't know what work you should do. So she turns to me and says, Scott, can we give her some work? So I did.
Oh, since this is like, I have prepaid 20 hours of work that's not being used. Could you make use of it, please?
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, man.
Because they have a contract and it's the contract and you don't give them enough work. That's not their problem.
No, no, of course.
No, I don't know how.
But she hated being idle. Yeah.
Yeah, she hated being idle, and she also did not like her company. She loved my client, but she didn't like her company. And the company paid her $1,000 and charged him $2,200. Okay. And if you're the Rolls Royce, I mean, we all know about cars. There are $500 cars and there's $500,000 cars, and there's a big difference. But it struck me that she wasn't being treated very well, and he wasn't receiving value. And of course, that's totally subjective.
Yeah, you can compress that, right? Like you can give her a raise and give him a pay cut and be another.
And that's what I did. I said, well, if you're unhappy, let me talk to the client. I talked to the client. I said, listen, I can save you $700 a month. And she's going to make an extra $500 a month. And I'll manage it if you're okay with that. So he said, great. You know, I'm of course happy to save $700. And so then she started looking at she could see what I was doing, right? And she said, you know, you're working way too hard. And I go, yeah, I know, but you know, what can you do? And she says, well, I know some people that can help you and do this work for you. Because a lot of the work I do is it's all repetitive. Like, you know, so it's other people could do it easily. And so she found these two amazing young men, and we had a meeting, and then they did some work. And then each week we were having this meeting and she's running the meeting. And I realized she's actually running my company. So maybe I should have a more formal relationship and compensate her. And so now she's, I don't know,
So I basically gave her a raise. Yes.
Yeah, she doubled her money. Well, and what happened at the same time, and I think, you know, this is why I say that this whole COVID thing has been a blessing for me, was I'm from Winnipeg, Manitoba, Canada, and she was working for a number of dentists in an office in Winnipeg, Manitoba, Canada. And because of COVID, nobody was going to the office. So they said, I'm sorry, you know, we can't use you. Goodbye. So she had lost this client and lost this income. And then I come along and replace it and better. So...
Oh, so the original 20 hours became full time.
Well, she was working full time for him, and then she's working full time for me because she's in the Philippines and she's young and she wants to work as much as she can to be able to buy a house. So
all right.
The good news is that they just put a down payment on a lot out in the countryside and they're going to be building a house there. And she sent me a picture and she says, you see this building here? And I go, yeah. She says, well, that's yours. When you're old and gray, I said, you know, I am already, you're going to come here and we're going to look after you. So,
well, that's fantastic.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
So now we have about 17, 18 people. I call them remote staff. I don't call them virtual assistants. And because the other thing that happened was, so she's helping me do my business. And what that meant was the things that I had no time to do, I could start doing. So I'm giving more and better service to our clients.
Right.
And also I told them, you know, we're not a remote staff company. We're not a podcast producing company. We are a problem solving company. So as you're talking to our clients and they talk to you about a problem, let me know. Let us see if we can solve that problem. We want to solve all of their problems if we can, right? And if it falls into the realm of what we can do. So one of my clients said, you know, we're just banged for time. I can't get everything organized and blah, blah, blah. And we have loans that we process and we don't have enough time to do that. So I told Trixie, I said, let's, you know, can you do that? Can you find someone to do this? She says, sure. And of course, the other thing that happened, again, this is a blessing from COVID, was the Chinese and the Americans laid off all their Filipino workers. So people that had been working 10, 15 years in a job had no work. So when Trixie comes along and says, hey, you've been an executive assistant for 20 years, 10 years, say, we have an executive position here. Would you like to? And of course, they're not like rookies. They know what to do. The client has no clue, but they just tell the client, no worries. Give me this.
These are trained people with deep experience. So you have the pick of the talent pool.
Yeah, and they're all excited. And what I talk about all the time is being treated with respect.
Yes.
I treat them all with respect. Everybody in the organization knows we treat everybody with respect. The only people that we take on are clients or people that we know are very respectful, because it's very, because in my experience, the Filipinos have huge hearts, but they're very much taken advantage of in a lot of places.
Yeah.
And I, you know, one of my best friends is married to one and he's known her for, I don't know how many decades. And so I've known the whole relationship. And when they started out, she was a nanny and the family that she was a nanny at treated her like dirt.
Yeah.
And he was so mad. And I remember that. And so we treat everybody well, we create this good environment for them and our clients just love them. And what do? They tell their friends. And then their friends are like, it's like every week we have two or three requests for an executive assistant. And oftentimes it's, I know I need the help, but I just don't know what to do. Or I tried it before and it never worked. Well, that's because you didn't have a good, and so we try to do a really good job of matching them up with the right types of personalities and the right quality of people. And it's not just executive assistants, loan processors, outbound callers, that sort of stuff. And it's just, and we're amazed. Like she and I, we just talk to each other and we go, can you believe we're like 18 people?
Uh-huh. And so, this is thanks to there being decent connection, like the broadband is available, the people are able to do the work, And how does it work for time zone switch? I mean, they are multiple.
A lot of times they stay up all night.
They just work at night, yeah.
Well, and that's the other thing is I say, look, I want to try to get it so that you're not up all night, but sometimes that's not the case. So we'll talk to the other thing that's nice about an executive assistant in a place like the Philippines is there could be a lot of work that you give them to do at 5 o'clock at night. You go home, watch TV, go to sleep, wake up in the morning, and it's all done. So right. Try to get them to work.
Okay.
Start two or three hours before the client starts, so they get everything organized and up to date, and then the client hits there and they say, okay, I got to do this, and then they're done. And then they may show up later on in the day or, like they could finish at 10 in the morning, like 5 till 10 in the morning. And then they could end up working, you know, like 9 to 12 in the evening, except that's 9 in the morning till noon in the Philippines, right? So you'd be working a little bit in the evenings because it's the opposite, right? The morning here is the evening there. So they'll work for a while in the morning, and then they have 2 or 3 hours interaction with the client. And then it just sort of depends. Like one of the things that we get them to do one of the problems a lot of clients have is managing their inbox. Okay. Yep. So they have like 3 types of emails, right? They have the spam email that takes them to Amazon and that wastes 2 hours of their day. Then they have the moderately important emails that if they answered tomorrow, it would be okay. And then they have the emergency ones that they got to know right away. And this was our first client had this problem, right? So once he kind of trained her as to which were which, then she would text him when there was an emergency email, right? Like the high priority email had to be dealt with right away. She would just go, hey, George, here's this is the email, blah, blah, blah. I better check it right away, right? And then he'd look and he'd say, actually, that wasn't that important. This is why it wasn't or whatever. Or yeah, that great, thanks. So that they fine tune it. And he's like 10 times more productive because he doesn't go off to Amazon and 13 other sites for 3 hours in the middle of the day.
Only interrupted by real need for interrupts. Yeah.
Right.
Okay.
And then what she does is she takes all the medium, has to be answered emails. And I believe what she does is, this is what I told her to do, but I don't check it. So I don't know. Someone else checks it. She makes one email and she says, oh, these are all the questions. And then he answers all the questions, sends it back, and then she pops it into the emails that are supposed to go.
Wow.
And sends it all off, right? So he spends, maybe an hour a day on email instead of 3 hours a day on email and 4 hours a day on spam sites that he shouldn't have gone to. So
it sounds all good. So it sounds to me like you have managed to honor your good heart, your wish to help people. Right.
Yeah.
And
I have a program that I call 500 for 500 plus one. And it came from when I was traveling and I was invited to Tunisia to talk to some entrepreneurs, some young entrepreneurs, 30 somethings. And then I was in Mombasa, Kenya, and I was by this highway, and I was impressed with the Tunisians, how smart they were and how sharp they were and how hardworking they were and how poor the system was there. You just kept them down. There was all these different problems in terms of trying to make any sort of, small business for yourself and that sort of thing. And then when I was in Mombasa, it's like noon, it's 105 degrees, the sun is beating down, and I see this guy walking down the highway, pulling a cart full of wood. And I thought, I wouldn't, for pennies, he's not getting very much money. I said, I would never work that hard. And so my whole preconceived notion of, poor people are lazy, was like thrown out. And I thought, if I could help, and I asked people in both countries, if you can make $500 US a month, would that make a difference in your life? And they were like, yeah, we'd have a life, right?
It's a massive difference, right?
A massive difference. So I thought that's what I wanted to do. And I had a number of false starts, and I thought I'd, maybe try and get some people to help me teach them affiliate marketing, because that seemed to be a good way to do it online. I never thought that I would end up hiring 500 people. And I haven't yet, but I could see in 2 or 3 years having an organization with 500 people, and because we're just, it's just growing organically, right? And we can see who our ideal clients are, and we can see that there's lots of them and they need help. So the whole idea was to help 500 people make $500 a month, improve their local community, because the money, you know, spiral, you know, you pay the grocer, you buy some clothes, you buy, you know, get some things fixed, and it, there's that multiplier effect that occurs. And so that's what I tell all the clients. Okay. This is why we're doing this. We're not doing this to make money. And the other thing we tell them is what we're paying the staff and how much we're taking. We need to make money, because if we don't make money, we're not going to be interested when you call us with a problem. Right? And everybody understands that, right? But I'm not doubling the wage of the staff, right? Yeah. I just think that's excessive, right? I mean, if you've got 500 staff members and you're making $1,000 a month on them, and they're only making, you know, $1,000, that's just, I just don't see that as being reasonable.
Right. Well, you could, because others have done it, but
yeah, you could argue it's possible, but I just don't think it's fair. Right.
Right. And so I guess what you're doing is you're giving the unfair advantage to the local person, your contract person.
Yeah, we're paying them more than they would get from
other. Well, I see it the other way, is that I can hire a person for less than what, yes, I would have to hire it elsewhere.
Right.
Yeah. I guess in a way that's not nice, because you're exporting jobs from the rich countries to the poor countries, right?
Well, the rich countries are getting checks from their governments, and the poor countries, they aren't.
Oh, I'm not saying that this is not helping the world. It's just what it's doing.
It's not my job to help.
Oh, I know.
Germany.
I'm just thinking that, you know, I have this person working for me in Canada, and they're getting a wage that's probably double of what I can hire a person with you.
Right. Well, and I think one of the things that people have to think about wherever they are is, what value are they giving, right? Mm. Like, one, for example, a lot of what my business is with my clients is, I get together with them, we record a video, we turn it into an audio, we turn it into a blog post, we get traffic to it, that sort of thing. And nowhere ever did we ever talk about taking a snippet of text and turning it into an image quote. But we do 2 per client per week. And we send it off to them, and they put it posted on their Facebook or whatever. So it's a picture of them with some wise thing that they said. And, you know, they love that and everything else, but we didn't have to do that. But I just thought, you know what, that's a really good way to, you know,
raise it,
you know, raise their profile, get stuff onto their social media. That's, it's interesting. That's helpful. That's not always salesy, salesy, salesy. And, we're looking now at doing the same thing, except making it a video. And these aren't long. I mean, it's not like it takes 2 hours to make the image quote, right? Yeah. Although from, if you look, it depends on how you look at it, right? Because somebody had to look at the whole thing that the person said and pick it out. And then somebody had to make the image, and then somebody has to post it and all the rest of it. But it just seemed to me that that would be a good thing to do. So as I find things that are good for my clients, I tell them, and we talk about it, and then we implement it and we move forward. And I don't charge them anymore. So that, you know, because I want to be at the point where it's like the stupidest idea in the world is to get rid of Scott and his team, right? So if I'm working for you as a one-man shop, then I need to, and I'm serious about it, then I need to sit down and say, okay, well, how can I help Martin, you know, more and more and more? And
great.
And that's what I would say to your person is, like, you know, you need to make sure that you're constantly reinforcing the value, because I tell my staff, you know, there's 100 million people in the Philippines who'd like to have your job. And I don't tell you that to scare you, but to tell you, you know, don't get complacent. And I'm not complacent with my clients, right? And don't be complacent with yours. So it's all about giving value and being seen to give value. And the people that do, you know, you never let them go. And it's interesting because a few of my clients, you know, they've asked me to go to their marketing meetings. And so I meet the people that are on their marketing team, and they all say the same thing. It's like, once you start working with us, you never go away. Like, they're people that are working 30 years for them, right? On their marketing team, or they're, you know, their number 2 person has been there for 40 years. And it's pretty astounding, right?
Yes.
So, you know, once you find gold people, you keep them.
Okay. It's a nice story.
Thank you. Thank you.
Yep. It's good. Who knows? Maybe my customers will soon be talking to one of your employees.
Yeah. Well, if you're overwhelmed and you need help,
we're getting there.
Hold on to Martin, and Martin will get you a hold of me. We only do referrals, by the way. Like, we don't market this or shout it out or anything. I mean, if you hadn't have said I want to talk about this, I wouldn't have been talking about it. But I trust you a lot, and I know your judgment. So if someone calls me up and says, hey, Martin told me to call you, and then I'm happy to talk to you.
Great.
Because I know you're a good person.
Thank you. And yes, I have.
Not you a good person, but your friend is a good person. Yeah. I know you're a good person. But
I know I'm a good person because I have on my website this link that says reviews. And if you click on that, you can see, I mean, this is hosted on a third party, right? Like, I don't even control it.
Right? Good.
It just is a stream of people doing whatever they do. And we get 4.8 out of 5 long-term.
Nice.
And the stuff that people say make me blush at times, right?
You and Maureen go above and beyond. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah, that's one thing that saved us. You know, when Google did this deplatforming of all alternative nutritional kind of stuff,
right?
They really cut, you know, our traffic went down from 2,000 a day to 300 a day.
Wow.
That's I don't know what the number is, a seventh. And anyway, if it were not for the mailing list we had, and for the stellar, I guess I could call it reputation with our customers.
Yeah.
We would have been out of business.
Yeah.
Yeah. Same beauty on Facebook, where we used to have a pretty easy time advertising our stuff, but no longer can you easily talk on Facebook about solutions. They just don't make it. They don't make it easy to get people to notice you. Not in my world, not in the alternative health.
They don't want people to know what you know.
Yeah. Really, that's because they have gone in bed with the guys who want my message to not be seen.
Yeah. Do no evil is gone.
Pardon?
That was, I think, their quote, their
oh, do mission. No evil. That was a motto at Google.
That was their motto, and I don't think it's their motto anymore.
Yeah, probably not. I understand that both the two founders, Sergey and whoever this other guy's name was, are no longer involved in the running of the company.
No, I don't know.
I don't know that.
I don't pay any attention to that.
Don't know.
Page, I think, is the other one. I don't know. They made some other company that took over the company, and I just like.
Yeah. Outside of our focus. Okay.
That's right.
Well, good. So this is a long chat. I don't know if we're going to manage to do it all in one piece, or if we need to chop it up into two. We might.
You might want to do part one, part two.
Yeah, part two, all about running a remote business and using the modern technology from any place on the planet.
Right.
Yeah, I'm managing my business from Mombasa, and I'm talking to you wherever you may be.
Yeah. Well, you know, and I had a problem because a lot of places the Wi-Fi was not great. And you know, we used to record like on Skype. And if my Wi-Fi was bad, the recording was bad. But I use a system called StreamYard.com now, and it records to their servers wherever their servers are, and that has nothing to do with me anymore. Although I can produce it and everything else. So now I can do the recordings, and if my Wi-Fi is bad, I don't care, right? I just have them all set up properly, and then it records, and the recording is great. So that was my big problem that I had to solve, and now that it's solved, it means I can go a lot of places that are maybe iffy, as opposed to having to always be someplace that had super good Wi-Fi, which is mm-hmm. exciting. And a lot of places are really improving, like Medellin. So Eastern Europe is like makes Canada look like it's in the dark ages. But
oh, Scott, I remember it was 6 years ago. 6 years ago, I went traveling into Czech Republic, and I arrived, and I was able to, for $100, to rent a hotspot.
Wow.
Which was 4 megabit bandwidth, and it was fully portable. It was anywhere, any location. It was wireless, right? Like it was a cell phone based hotspot that I could take any place in the entire country.
Nice.
Well, $100.
Right? Can't beat that.
No, it was just crazy. Then it felt like, what? They have all this?
Yeah. Which is a great reason for traveling, because then you start seeing how other people do things and opportunities, but also where things can be improved, as opposed to just thinking, well, this is the way it is and I need to put up with it. And it's not just Wi-Fi, it's different types of foods. And
speaking of Wi-Fi, I'm looking at it over there. With the rising saturation of the Wi-Fi all around us, especially with the 5G rollout, we are seeing a lot of people getting flooded with the response. It's called a voltage-gated calcium channel. It's a cellular response where the body itself is flooding your cells with a stress response that's triggered by the Wi-Fi that you're inside of. It's as if you were it's as if you were dipped into a toxic aquarium.
Yeah.
And so I've had a client, for example, say to me, when I drive into the downtown area where the smart grid is, I'm instantly in a panic attack.
Wow. Like so people are starting to feel it now.
Oh yeah. The more sensitive, you know, the canary in the coal mine, so to speak.
Yes.
They are feeling it earlier than some others. But anyway, so that thing is becoming an issue. So I've teamed up with a guy, a distributor of this technology called Blue Shield. And so I take that with me wherever I go now. And that thing is protective of my physical health.
That's that little white thing that's almost a credit card.
Yeah, sensor. You have that. You bought it.
I got that. Yeah, I got that. I really like it. It's actually down.
Well, you have it somewhere.
I have it somewhere.
Okay. Well, I think
we're good for another year.
Okay. Thank you, my good people. This is Martin Pitella and Scott Patton for Life Enthusiast. We are restoring vitality to you and to the planet. We are at www.life-enthusiast.com, and I am also available by phone at 866-543-3388. Scott, thank you so much for giving us your time, and peace be with you.
And also with you. Thank you, Martin. Thank you, everybody, for watching. We'll see you next year.